glance up and down the table showed that everyone else was done for the day as well.
"Well, then," I said, "what are we going to do to amuse ourselves?"
"There's always more shuffleboard," Susan said.
"I have a better idea," Harry said. "Anyone have plants at 1500?
We all shook our heads.
"Swell," Harry said. "Then meet me back here. I have a field trip for the old farts."
"Are we even supposed to be here?" Jesse asked.
"Sure," said Harry. "Why not? And even if we're not, what are they going to do? We're not really in the military yet. We can't officially be court-martialed."
"No, but they can probably blow us out an airlock," Jesse said.
"Don't be silly," Harry said. "That would be a waste of perfectly good air."
Harry had led us to an observation deck in the colonial area of the ship. And indeed, while we recruits had never been specifically told we couldn't go to the colonial's decks, neither had we been told that we could or should. Standing as we were in the deserted deck, the seven of us stood out like truant school kids at a peep show. Which, in one sense, was what we were.
"During our little exercises today, I struck up a conversation with one of the colonial folks," Harry said. "And he mentioned that the Henry Hudson was going to make its skip today at 1535. And I figure that none of us has actually seen what a skip looks like, so I asked him where one would go to get a good view. And he mentioned here. So, here we are. And with," Harry glanced at his PDA, "4 minutes to spare."
"Sorry about that," Thomas said. "I didn't mean to hold everyone up. The fettuccine was excellent, but my lower intestine would apparently beg to differ."
"Please feel free not to share such information in the future, Thomas," Susan said. "We don't know you that well yet."
"Well, how else will you get to know me that well?" Thomas said.
No one bothered to answer that one.
"Anyone know where we are right now? In space, that is?"
I asked, after a few moments of silence had passed.
"We're still in the solar system," Alan said, and pointed out the window. "You can tell because you can still see the constellations. See, look, there's Orion. If we'd have traveled any significant distance, the stars would have shifted their relative position in the sky. Constellations would have been stretched out or would be entirely unrecognizable." "Where are we supposed to be skipping to?" Jesse asked. "The Phoenix system," Alan said. "But that won't tell you anything, because Phoenix is the name of the planet, not of the star. There is a constellation named Phoenix, and in fact, there it is." He pointed to a collection of stars. "But the planet Phoenix isn't around any of the stars in that constellation. If I remember correctly, it's actually in the constellation Lupus, which is farther north." He pointed to another, dimmer collection of stars. "But we can't actually see the star from here." "You sure know your constellations," Jesse said, admiringly. "Thanks," Alan said. "I wanted to be an astronomer when I was younger, but astronomers get paid for shit. So I became a theoretical physicist instead."
"Lots of money in thinking up new subatomic particles?" Thomas asked.
"Well, no," Alan admitted. "But I developed a theory that helped the company I worked for create a new energy containment system for naval vessels. The company's profit-sharing incentive plan gave me 1% for that, which came to more money than I could spend, and trust me, I made the effort."
"Must be nice to be rich," Susan said.
It wasn't too bad," Alan admitted. "Of course, I'm not rich anymore. You give it up when you join. And you lose other things, too. I mean, in about a minute, all that time I spent memorizing the constellations will be wasted effort. There's no Orion or Ursa Minor or Cassiopeia where we're going. This might sound stupid, but it's entirely possible I'll miss the constellations more than I miss the money. You can always make more money. But we're not coming back here. It's the last time I'll see these old friends."
Susan went over and put an arm around Alan's shoulder. Harry looked down at his PDA.
"Here we go,"
he said, and began a countdown. When he got to one, we all looked up and out the window. It wasn't dramatic. One second, we were looking at one star-filled sky. The next, we were looking at another. If you blinked, you would have missed it. And yet, you could tell it was an entirely alien sky. We all may not have had Alan's knowledge of the constellations, but most of us know how to pick out Orion and the Big Dipper from the stellar lineup. They were nowhere to be found. An absence subtle, and yet substantial. I glanced over at Alan. He was standing like a pillar, hand in Susan's.
"We're turning,"
Thomas said. We watched as the stars slid counterclockwise as the Henry Hudson changed course. Suddenly, the enormous blue arm of the planet Phoenix hovered above us, and above it, or below it from our orientation, was a space station so large, so massive, and so busy that all we could do was bulge our eyes at it. Finally, someone spoke, and to everyone's surprise, it was Maggie.
"Would you look at that?" she said.
We all turned to look at her. She was visibly annoyed.
"I'm not mute," she said. "I just don't talk much. This deserves comment of some kind."
"No kidding,"
Thomas said, turning back to look at it.
"It makes Colonial Station look like a pile of puke."
"How many ships do you see?"
Jesse said to me.
"I don't know," I said. "Dozens. There could be hundreds, for all I know. I didn't even know this many starships existed."
"If any of us were still thinking Earth was the center of the human universe," Harry said, "now would be an excellent time to revise that theory." We all stood and looked at the new world out the window. My PDA chimed me awake at 0545, which was notable in that I had set it to wake me at 0600. The screen was flashing. There was a message labeled "Urgent" on it. I tapped the message. "Notice," it read. "From 0600 to 1200, we will be conducting the final physical improvement regimen for all recruits. To ensure prompt processing, all recruits are required to remain in their staterooms until such time as colonial officials arrive to escort them to their physical improvement sessions. To aid in the smooth function of this process, stateroom doors will be secured as of 0600. Please take this time to take care of any personal business that requires use of the restrooms or other areas outside your stateroom. If, after 0600, you need to use the restroom facilities, contact the colonial staffer on your stateroom deck through your PDA. You will be notified 15 minutes prior to your appointment. Please be dressed and prepared when colonial officials arrive at your door. Breakfast will not be served. Lunch and dinner will be served at the usual time."
"Well, at my age, you don't have to tell me twice to pee." I padded down to the restroom to take care of business and hoped that my appointment was sooner rather than later, as I didn't want to have to get permission to relieve myself. My appointment was neither sooner nor later. At 0900, my PDA alerted me, and at 0915, there was a sharp rap at my door and a man's voice calling my name. I opened the door to find two colonials on the other side. I received permission from them to make a quick restroom stop, and then followed them from my deck, back to the waiting room of Dr. Russell. I waited briefly before I was allowed entrance into his examination room.
"Mr. Perry, good to see you again," he said, extending his hand.
The colonials who accompanied me left through the far door.
"Please step up to the crèche."
"Well, the last time I did, you jackhammered several thousand bits of metal into my head," I said. "Forgive me if I'm not entirely enthusiastic about climbing in again."
"I understand," Dr. Russell said.
"However, today is going to be pain-free, and we are under something of a time constraint, so if you please..." He motioned to the crèche.
I reluctantly stepped in. "If I feel so much as a twinge, I'm going to hit you," I warned.
"Fair enough," Dr. Russell said, as he closed the crash door. I noted that unlike the last time, Dr. Russell bolted the door down to the crash. Maybe he was taking the threat seriously. I didn't mind. "Tell me, Mr. Perry," he said as he bolted the door, "what do you think of the last couple of days?" "They were confusing and irritating," I said. "If I knew I was going to be treated like a preschooler, I probably wouldn't have signed up." "And that's pretty much what everyone says," Dr. Russell said. "So let me explain a little bit about what we've been trying to do. We put in the sensor array for two reasons. First, as you may have guessed, we're monitoring your brain activity while you perform various basic functions and experience certain primal emotions. Every human's brain processes information and experience in more or less the same way, but at the same time, each person uses certain pathways and process unique to them. It's a little like how every human hand has five fingers, but each human being has his own set of fingerprints. What we've been trying to do is isolate your mental fingerprint. Make sense?" I nodded. "Good. So now you know why we had you doing ridiculous and stupid things for 2 days." "Like talking to a naked woman about my 7th birthday party," I said. "We get a lot of really useful information from that one," Dr. Russell said. "I don't see how," I said. "It's technical," Dr. Russell assured me. "In any event, the last couple of days give us a good idea of how your brain uses neural pathways and processes all sorts of stimuli, and that's information we can use as a template." Before I could ask, "A template for what?" Dr. Russell continued. "Second, the sensor array does more than record what your brain is doing. It can also transmit a real-time representation of the activity in your brain. Or, to put it another way, it can broadcast your consciousness. This is important because unlike specific mental processes, consciousness can't be recorded. It has to be live if it's going to make the transfer." "The transfer," I said. "That's right," Dr. Russell said. "Do you mind if I ask you what the hell you're talking about?" I said. Dr. Russell smiled. "Mr. Perry, when you signed up to join the Army, you thought we'd make you young again, right?"
"Yes," I said. "Everybody does. You can't fight a war with old people, yet you recruit them. You have to have some way to make them young again."
"How do you think we do it?" Dr. Russell asked.
"I don't know," I said. "Gene therapy, cloned replacement parts. You'd swap out old parts somehow and put in new ones."
"You're half right," Dr. Russell said. "We do use gene therapy and cloned replacements, but we don't swap out anything except you."
"I don't understand," I said.
I felt very cold, like reality was being tugged out from under my feet. "Your body is old, Mr. Perry. It's old and it won't work for much longer. There's no point in trying to save it or upgrade it. It's not something that gains value when it ages or has replaceable parts that keep it running like new. All a human body does when it gets older is get old. So we're going to get rid of it. We're getting rid of it all. The only part of you that we're going to save is the only part of you that hasn't decayed. Your mind, your consciousness, your sense of self." Dr. Russell walked over to the far door where the colonials had exited and rapped on it. Then he turned back to me. "Take a good look at your body, Mr. Perry," he said, "because you're about to say goodbye to it. You're going somewhere else."
"Where am I going, Dr. Russell?"
I asked. I could barely make enough spit to talk. "You're going here," he said, and opened the door. From the other side, the colonials came back in. One of them was pushing a wheelchair with someone in it. I craned my head to take a look, and I began to shake. It was me. 50 years ago. Chapter 5. "Now, I want you to relax," Dr. Russell said to me. The colonials had wheeled the younger me to the other crash and were in the process of placing the body into it.
It, or he, or I, or whatever, offered no resistance. They might as well have been moving someone in a coma. Or a corpse. I was fascinated and horrified. A small little voice in my brain told me it was good I'd gone to the bathroom before I came in, or otherwise I'd be peeing down my leg.
How?
I began, and I choked. My mouth was too dry to talk. Dr. Russell spoke to one of the colonials who left and returned with a small cup of water. Dr. Russell held the cup as he gave the water to me, which was good because I don't think I could have managed to grip it. He spoke to me as I drank.
How is usually attached to one of two questions, he said. The first is, how did you make a younger version of me? The answer to that is that 10 years ago we took a genetic sample and used that to make your new body.
He took the cup away.
A clone, I said. Finally.
No, Dr. Russell said. Not exactly. The DNA has been heavily modified. You can see the most obvious difference, your new body's skin.
I looked back over and realized that in shock of seeing a younger version of me, I missed a rather obvious and glaring difference.
He's green, I said.
You're green, you mean, Dr. Russell said. Or will be in about 5 minutes. So that's one how question. The second one is, how do you get me into there?
He pointed to my green-skinned doppelganger.
And the answer to that is, we're transferring your consciousness.
How?
I asked. We take the representation of brain activity that's tracked by your sensor array and send it, and you, over there, Dr. Russell said. We've taken the brain pattern information we've collected over the last couple of days and used it to prepare your new brain for your consciousness, so when we send you over, things will look familiar. I'm giving you the simplified version of things, obviously. It's vastly more complicated, but it'll do for right now. Now, let's get you plugged in.
Dr. Russell reached up and began to maneuver the crush's arm over my head. I started to move my head away, so he stopped.
We're not putting anything in this time, Mr. Perry, he said. The injector cap has been replaced with a signal amplifier. There's nothing to worry about.
Oh, sorry,
I said,
and moved my head back into position.
Don't be,
Dr. Russell said, and fit the cap over my skull.
You're taking this better than most recruits. The guy before you screamed like a pig and fainted. We had to transfer him over unconscious. He's going to wake up young and green and very, very disturbed. Trust me, you're a doll. I smiled and glanced over to the body that would soon be me.
Where's his cap?
I asked. Doesn't need one, Dr. Russell said, and began tapping his PDA. Like I said, this body's been heavily modified.
That sounds ominous, I said.
You'll feel differently once you're inside.
Dr. Russell finished playing with his PDA and turned back.
Okay, we're ready. Let me tell you what's going to happen next.
Please,
I said.
He turned the PDA around. When I press this button, he indicated a button on the screen, your sensor array will begin transmitting your brain activity into the amplifier. Once your brain activity is sufficiently mapped, I'll connect this crush to a specialized computer bank. At the same time, a similar connection will be opened to your new brain over there. When the connections check out, we'll broadcast your consciousness into your new brain. When the brain activity takes hold in your new brain, we'll sever the connection. And there you are, in your new brain and body. Any questions?
Does this procedure ever fail?
I asked. You would ask that question, Dr. Russell said. The answer is yes. On rare occasions, something can go wrong. However, it's extremely rare. I've been doing this for 20 years, thousands of transfers, and I've lost someone only once. The woman had a massive stroke during the transfer process. Her brain patterns became chaotic, and consciousness didn't transfer. Everyone else made it through fine.
So, as long as I don't actually die, I'll live,
I said. An interesting way to put it, but yes, that's about right.
How do you know when consciousness is transferred?
We'll know it through here, Dr. Russell tapped the side of his PDA. And we'll know it because you'll tell us. Trust me, you'll know when you've made the transfer.
How do you know?
I asked.
Have you ever done this? Been transferred?
Dr. Russell smiled. Actually, yes, he said. Twice, in fact.
But you're not green, I said.
That's the second transfer. You don't have to stay green forever, he said, almost wistfully. Then he blinked and looked at his PDA again. I'm afraid we have to cut the questions short now, Mr. Perry, since I have several more recruits to transfer after you. Are you ready to begin?
Hell no, I'm not ready, I said. I'm so scared my bowels are about to cut out.
Then let me rephrase, Dr. Russell said. Are you ready to get it over with?
God, yes, I said.
Then let's get to it, Dr. Russell said, and tapped the screen of his PDA. The crash gave a slight thunk as something physically switched on inside it. I glanced over to Dr. Russell. The amplifier, he said. This part will take about a minute. I grunted acknowledgement and looked over to my new me. It was cradled in the creche, motionless, like a wax figurine that someone had spilled green coloring into during the casting process. It looked like I did so long ago. Better than I did, actually. I wasn't the most athletic young adult on the block. This version of me looked like he was muscled like a competitive swimmer, and it had a great head of hair. I couldn't even imagine being in that body. "We're at full resolution," Dr. Russell said. "Opening connection." He tapped his PDA. There was a slight jolt, and then it suddenly felt like there was a big, echoey room in my brain.
"Whoa,"
I said. "Echo chamber?" Dr. Russell asked. I nodded. "That's the computer bank," he said. "Your consciousness is perceiving the small time lag between there and here. It's nothing to worry about." "Okay, opening connection between the new body and the computer bank." Another PDA tap. From across the room, the new me opened his eyes. "I did that," Dr. Russell said.
"He's got cat's eyes," I said.
"You've got cat's eyes," Dr. Russell said. "Both connections are clear and noise-free. I'm going to start the transfer now. You're going to feel a little disoriented." A PDA tap, and I fell
way down,
and felt like I was being pressed hard through a fine mesh mattress, and all the memories I ever had hit me in the face like a runaway brick wall. One clear flash of standing at the altar, watching Kathy walk down the aisle, seeing her foot catch the front of her gown, a small stutter in her step. Then she corrected beautifully, smiled up at me as if to say, "Yeah, like that's going to stop me." Another flash of Kathy. Where the hell did I put the vanilla? And then the clatter of the mixing bowl hitting the kitchen tile. God damn it, Kathy. And then I'm me again, staring into Dr. Russell's room, feeling dizzy and looking straight at Dr. Russell's face, and also the back of his head, and thinking to myself, "Damn. That's a neat trick." And it seems like I just had that thought in stereo. And it hits me. I'm in two places at the same time. I smile and see the old me and the new me smile simultaneously.
"I'm breaking the laws of physics," I say to Dr. Russell from two mouths.
And he says, "You're in."
And then he taps that goddamn PDA of his.
And there's just one of me again.
the other me. I can tell because I'm no longer staring at the new me anymore. I'm looking at the old me. And it stares at me like it knows something truly strange has just happened. And then the stare seems to say, "I'm no longer needed." And then it closes its eyes.
"Mr. Perry,"
Dr. Russell said, and then repeated it, and then lightly slapped me on the cheek.
"Yes,"
I said. "I'm here. Sorry.
What's your full name, Mr. Perry?"
I thought about it for a second. Then, "John Nicholas Perry.
What's your birthday?"
"June 10.
"What was the name of your second-grade teacher?"
I looked directly at Dr. Russell. Christ, man, I couldn't even remember that when I was in my old body. Dr. Russell smiled.
"Welcome to your new life, Mr. Perry. You made it through with flying colors."
He unlatched the door to the crash and opened it wide.
"Come out of there, please."
I placed my hands, my green hands, on the side of the crash and pushed outward. I placed my right foot forward and staggered a little bit. Dr. Russell came up beside me and steadied me.
"Careful," he said. "You've been an older man for a while. It's going to take you a little bit of time to remember how to be in a young body."
"What do you mean?" I said.
"Well," he said, "for one thing, you can straighten up."
He was right. I was stooped slightly. "Kids, drink your milk." I straightened up and took another step forward. And another.
Good news. I remembered how to walk.
I cracked a grin like a schoolboy as I paced in the room.
"How do you feel?"
Dr. Russell asked.
"I feel young," I said, only a little joyously.
"You should," Dr. Russell said. "This body has a biological age of 20. It's actually younger than that, but we can grow them fast these days." I jumped experimentally and felt like I bounced halfway back to Earth.
"I'm not even old enough to drink anymore," I said.
"You're still 75 inside," Dr. Russell said. At that, I stopped my little jumping and walked over to my old body, resting in the crèche. It looked sad and sagged, like an old suitcase. I reached out to touch my old face. It was warm, and I felt breath. I recoiled.
"It's still alive,"
I said, backing away.
"It's brain dead," Dr. Russell said quickly. "All your cognitive functions made the transfer. Once they had, I shut down this brain. It's running on autopilot, breathing and pumping blood, but nothing more, and that only provisionally. Left on its own, it'll be dead within a few days."
I crept back to my old body.
"What's going to happen to it?" I asked.
"We'll store it in the short term," Dr. Russell said. "Mr. Perry, I hate to rush you, but it's time for you to return to your quarters so I can continue my work with other recruits. We have quite a few to get through before noon."
"I have some questions about this body," I said.
"We have a brochure," Dr. Russell said. "I'll have it downloaded into your PDA.
"Gee, thanks," I said.
"Not at all," Dr. Perry said, and nodded towards the colonials. "These men will escort you back to your quarters. Congratulations again." I walked over to the colonials, and we turned to go. Then I stopped.
"Wait," I said. "I forgot something."
I walked over to my old body again, still in the crèche. I looked over to Dr. Russell and pointed to the door.
"I need to unlock this," I said.
Dr. Russell nodded. I unlocked it, opened it, and took my old body's left hand. On the ring finger was a simple gold band. I slipped it off and slipped it on my ring finger. Then I cupped my old face with my new hands.
"Thank you," I said to me. "Thank you for everything."
Then I went out with the Colonials.
The New You, an introduction to your new body for recruits of the Colonial Defense Forces. From the staff of Colonial Genetics, 2 centuries of building better bodies. This was the splash page of the brochure waiting for me on my PDA. You'll just have to imagine the illustration, which echoed the famous Da Vinci study of the human body, only with a nude green man where the other dude used to be. But let's continue. By now you have received your new body from the Colonial Defense Force. Congratulations! Your new body is the end result of decades of refinement by scientists and engineers at Colonial Genetics, and is optimized for the rigorous demands